I'm Christian Scheller. Welcome to my podcast, an enthusiastic ramble through whatever has taken my interest the past week or so. Expect technology, games, history, travel, geekery, and as always, much, much more. Welcome to another Chinchilla Squeaks News with me, Christian Scheller. I am not going to take up too much of your time today because the past week or so has been very busy at KubeCon, which has given me lots and lots to think about, actually, but not so much to read things, more listening to people, seeing things, some of which I will mention in passing in this episode, but most of which will be coming out in future interviews. All right, then. So first, I'm going to go back to the past a little bit. I was listening to a podcast that I listened to on and off, depending on the subject, called Behind the Bastards. It's a no-holds-barred podcast covering the less good side of many famous people, shall we say. And whilst I was away, I listened to the four-part episode on Steve Jobs. Not all of it was a complete surprise to me as a long-term Apple, maybe I should say user in this context rather than fan, but I won't go into too much detail. The thing that caught my attention was they were talking about on the original Macintosh, Steve Jobs wanted to have a different drive from the standard floppy drive. And this was rather strangely called the Twiggy. And about 10 years ago, so I'm referring to an old post here on Cult of Mac, but I found it on a few other Mac websites as well. Someone actually found one of these Macs because most of them had been hidden and secreted away from Steve Jobs in the past with a functioning Twiggy drive. And it details the efforts some engineers, some ex-engineers, even calling in Steve Wozniak to get it working. And these are the days when getting hardware or getting anything working in computing was probably a challenge, actually. And it was not the quote-unquote standard 3.5-inch floppy drive, but a 5.25-inch drive. This was actually the same one that was used in the Lisa, but never released in the Mac. Although I wonder if that, I guess it wasn't the same 5.25-inch drives you got in other computers. I remember my dad had an old IBM machine that had one of those too. And you can see it in the picture here. It's kind of interesting because on the actual Mac, the slot takes up maybe half the width. And on this, it takes up like three quarters of the width. I always kind of liked those floppy floppies, to be honest with you. But it's interesting to see. If you're into that kind of thing, which is probably not many of you, but I always love hearing these weird tales of engineering past and how they get rediscovered in the present, or the 10 years ago present, I suppose. Okay, AI, of course. So I'm going to tie a lot of this back to some things I've been working on, which is why I've been looking at some of these articles. The first, this is not necessarily a unique post, but it's something I've been thinking about, so I bookmarked a few to look at. And the first is kind of a reprise of a link from the last news show, actually, which is not something I usually do. I mentioned an article from Dev.2 on the rise of local LLMs. And this is one area I really want to dive into. So whilst I was at KubeCon, I went to a side meetup hosted by Alama, Koyeb, Docker, and a few other people looking at, this was kind of their topic of conversation. And I realized how big and how broad this now is. It's something that I have looked at myself through, mostly through the kind of desktop wrapper applications like Mac Whisper, like Mac GPT, these kinds of things that they use local in different contexts here. Like Mac Whisper is downloading the model. The Mac GPT isn't. The Stable Diffusion one, which I forget the name of, does download a model. This is not quite the same thing. It's actually then, well, it's different flavors of tuning, building, and or running your own models. And I was putting together a new draft of an article for someone, actually looking at FOSDEM, so a couple of months ago now, and came across the video of someone from a French tech company who was looking at French language models and actually showed a rather concerning statistic. I mean, not necessarily for me, because I am a native English speaker, but a concerning statistic for everybody else, that more than 70% of models are trained purely on English, and a vast percentage of them that we know of, there may be some in more secretive countries, come from America. So she asked in French how to cook a French recipe. She first tried with Mistral, which is not necessarily a fully open model, but is one that you can retrain, retweak. Ironically, they're actually a French company. It started answering in French, then made reference to an American chef, and then finished the answer in English. And this is from a French company. So she detailed, A, how she retuned some of those models to answer exclusively in French, and then how she created her own exclusively French models. And there is an entire initiative now that I saw announced at FOSDEM who are looking to train models specifically in European languages, but also in those smaller languages like English to a certain extent, whether we argue whether that's still a European language is by the by. French and German, the two sort of French, German and Spanish, sorry, the two, three main European languages, but then also some of the more obscure ones, Slovak, Welsh, Gaelic, Czech, et cetera, On that, I saw some fascinating insights into the Czech language when it came to NLP, but that's sort of AI of the past. Anyway, as I say, it's not something that I'm really going to use because I am tending to want to query in English, but I'm certainly a supporter of diversity. And it just got me thinking about how people whose first language isn't English or who don't want to work in English, how they work with these LLMs. It would be very interesting to know what this is like, say, in Mandarin or Japanese or other very large languages in Asia. And I say Mandarin specifically because I am almost certain there's a lot of work going on in China, but we don't necessarily always hear about it. And this was something I noticed at KubeCon and the side events, that there were quite a lot of people working in the local LLM space from Asia. So they are well represented in the development space, but I wonder if they're well representing their languages. It's something to look into. Of course, the problem with anything that's translated is whilst I can be interested and be supportive, it doesn't necessarily mean I can test its effectiveness. But yeah, suffice it to say, if your first language isn't English and you're interested in looking into models, then I think there is a very active community out there who's interested in hearing from you and helping in some of that development. In a similar vein, this is referencing something that I read in MIT Technology Review, but also refers back to some things I saw at FOSDEM and KubeCon. And this article summarizes a lot of those discussions quite nicely around that open source in the traditional sense has a relatively definite meaning. We could argue that people have skewed it over the years, but we sort of know what it means. There have been various definitions of what open means in the past, what open source means. And this generally is around you can use a system, you can study a system, you can modify a system, and you can share a system. And with quote-unquote standard open source, this sort of mostly works. With AI, there's many, many different facets. The data sources are very different. If the training software, if the utilization software, if the software to use a model is open source, fine. Is the model open source? If the model's open source, can someone analyze it, study it, modify it, share it, without having access to special tooling? And this is where things get very interesting. And so there is a big, wide discussion amongst many of the open source initiatives and the wider community about what does it mean? And no one is sure quite now. And actually in the article, it does mention the OSI, the Open Source Initiative, and very much referring back to some of the people who were talking about this at FOSDEM and the concerns they have. And interestingly, going back to that same time, I interviewed Amanda Brock, who's been on the podcast a few times, the heads up Open UK, and she mentioned that previously Open UK and the event they have there, the State of OpenCon, previously was Open Source Software and Hardware, and then recently they've changed the name to Open Source Software, Hardware, and Data. This, I think, really reflects how, whilst commercial technology has realized the power of data for some time, open source is now realizing that data is important too. And it's not necessarily in the regard that they want to collect personal data, et cetera, et cetera. It's that we now have a form of open AI that needs data. And how do we handle that in the open source community? Interesting space, lots of discussions happening around it, something I will attempt to dig into a little bit more moving forward. Now, what's news from me? Well, a lot of things to cover from KubeCon, a lot of interviews. It was a very good event, probably the best KubeCon I've been to content-wise, actually. Met a lot of really interesting projects that I'm looking forward to digging into a lot more, but I haven't got around to doing any of them yet, of course. I have been putting together some music and edited versions of some readings of Flash Fiction. Actually, at the time of release of this, I will have published one of them to my very, very quiet TikTok account. So I will put a link to that in the notes. It was an interesting experience making some music again. I collaborated with a friend here, and we've got two ready to go, and I'll release the second one in a week or so. I'll also put those out to Instagram, but probably not YouTube Shorts. I'm not sure yet because they're too long for YouTube Shorts. And the tech writing book I have been working on will be published. This podcast should be coming out on Thursday the 28th, and it will be published on the 29th. So I don't have a link quite yet. I can add it later, but head on over to Pact and you should be able to find it. It's a tech writing one written by me. Onwards and upwards, I am already about to start work on the second book. So I'm actually looking forward to that, of getting into the process slowly. I'll be back next week with an interview. Not sure who or what yet. I almost want to get together a lot of the KubeCon interviews before it gets too late, but there are others that are older than that I should maybe get out first. I have been Christian Chiller, as always. You can find more about me at christianchiller.com, and thank you very much for joining me. Take care, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. Find out more about me at christianchiller.com, where you can find show notes, sign up for my newsletter, and find all of my writing, games, work, and video links. There's also details on how to get in touch with me. And if you want to get even closer to what I do, join my Discord server for behind-the-scenes discussions and helping me produce my shows and work.